As I mentioned earlier, we always gather some of the best and the brightest civic leaders and emerging civic leaders in Chicago. We have a few of those here today. I'm going to mention Rosanna Ander. Is Rosanna here?
In spirit.
Yeah. And I usually say on the way. I didn't see her, but I'm mentioning her anyway because Rosanna Ander in the crime lab and the education lab is just such a vital institution to Chicago. And Rosanna has run those for a number of years and is a great partner to City Club. So she's here in spirit, and I'm sure we'll see her very soon, Rosanna. But thank you to everybody involved in the crime labs and in the education labs, University of Chicago. Dwayne Deskins is here. Dwayne, a great advisor and member of the City Club. We have, Rick Estrada is here, a former and future speaker at City Club, right? Rick and I had just been discussing that. From Metropolitan Family Services, whom you all obviously know in this room. Speaking of family, most importantly, we have Elvis's wife, Cynthia, here. Welcome. And even more important, I keep talking about the next generation. I think this might be a City Club record. We've got a three-week-old in the room, and Elvis Jr., 3 weeks old. I'll try not to wake him up. But I am happy to hold him if you need any help. I'm gonna let Steve introduce our panelists in just a minute. Actually, why don't we do this? What I'll do is just to make it a little more efficient. I'll just mention our panelists by name. One who I know very well for a long time and really appreciate all of his service over so many years is Glenn Brooks from Community Policing for the Chicago Police Department. But we're really fortunate to have Jalen Arthur from CRED, who's also also a great partner of City Club, and of course Elvis Ortega, the lead liaison for street outreach for the City of Chicago. As I introduce Steve, I'd like to ask those panelists to come on up and just take a seat, and I will mention that Steve Perkins is going to be leading this conversation. Steve is the Director of Field Instruction for Metropolitan Peace Initiative, a division of the Metropolitan Family Services. He is a true Southsider, Chicagoan. He gets it. Like I keep saying, those who get it and dedicate their lives to making things better. He is one of those, just like all of these gentlemen that you'll see on the stage. Come on up, take a seat, and please. Let's have a great City Club welcome for Steve Perkins from the Metropolitan Peace Initiative and our panelists. You want to speak from here first? You're welcome to. Just careful there.
Okay. So first, let me just thank all of the leadership here at the City Club for allowing us to have this very important conversation here today. Also, all of the sponsors here at City Club. This is a conversation and a topic that is near and dear to our heart, both personally and professionally. So with that being said, I definitely want to get started today. Also thank our CEO, Rick Estrada, as well as our Executive Director, Vaughn Bryan, who's here with us, the Metropolitan Peace Initiative. So, good afternoon, and welcome to Metropolitan Peace Initiative's special panel discussion on how the community and the police are working together to help curb gun violence. I'm Steve Perkins, as mentioned, Director of Field Instruction of the Metropolitan Peace Initiative, also known as MPI. And I will be serving as your moderator, as mentioned. I'd like to begin first by telling you a little bit about MPI and our coalition of community partners that we have in our organization, formerly or now known as Community Partner for Peace, or CP4P for short. MPI is a division of Metropolitan Family Services, which coordinates, supports and sustains a cross-agency infrastructure made up of local community-based and citywide partners who deliver a comprehensive set of services to heal communities at the highest risk of gun violence. MPI was created to support Communities Partner for Peace. It is a coalition that is now represented of 15 community-based organizations that primarily focus on reducing gun violence in 28 of Chicago's most high-risk community areas, as you see here on the map. CP for P core services include the following: street outreach, case management, victim services, and community events known as Lights in the Nights. According to research from Northwestern's Corners, between 2017 and 2021, 383 shootings events were prevented, amounting to about 7 shootings and homicides a month by CP4P partners. And according to MPI's 2023 impact report, comparing 2023 year to date and to the same period of time, a peak year of 2021, shootings in the most CBI communities are down. Many exceed the citywide decline. In 2019, we had an idea of creating a community policing training. Then COVID hit and everything paused. Afterwards, Mayor Lightfoot at the time wanted us to go back after all of the unrest that stemmed from the death of George Floyd. Before 2023 implementations, there was no official professional understanding between CPD and CBI, and implementation varied throughout the city. Now there is a professional understanding that exists that outlines the complementary but also the independent roles and the rules of engagement of CPD and CBI. This is by no means a finished product. This professional understanding is still a work in progress. And so as we sit here today, we have our great panel, and hopefully that today with our conversation, they'll provide more insight. And so let us get started. I'd also like to thank each of you for coming here today and joining our conversation. So as we get started with our first question, I'll direct this question to each of the panelists, starting with Elvis. And we want to address, what is the professional understanding that exists between CPD and CVI? And to you, Elvis, why is it important that the mayor's office is involved?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again for having me. This is a major and great honor in my life to be here with you all. This is extremely important work that we all do as a community. And it's something that we've been thinking about for a very long time, and about how we can do this and not only professionalize the work, but make sure that we have a consistency that is most effective to respond to the violence that unfortunately happens in our city and time. When an incident happens, timing is everything for our first responders and for our community work. The work that the community does in CVI is that is their first responder. They're no different from anybody else in a jacket that says ambulance or, you know, firefighter or whatnot. So timing is everything. Previous to the professional understanding, when an incident happened, a outreach worker, please correct me, would normally find out about an incident via different avenues, whether it be a direct line of communication, somebody would call them, they were aware of an incident, they might have been within proximity because they're in the field a lot of times when this happens. And so there was a lot of these other, you know, avenues that they would find out. But they also would hear about things via radio chatter. Right. So the radio chatter. So a lot of our colleagues in outreach would, you know, move around throughout their beats and would monitor different communication points. And that was because, you know, the sooner we can respond. And when I say we, I mean the CVI teams, the sooner they can respond, the more likely they get an understanding of what happened, and we could prevent whatever retaliatory that may happen because of that. CVI has been part of this, you know, community response now for a very long time. But in the last 3 to 4 years, I think government specifically has really taken a closer look into how we can support this work. We have invested throughout the city in the last 4 years substantially a lot more than we have in the past. We recognize the efforts of institutions like MPI who are looking for ways to professionalize the work to make sure that folks are out in the field, have a better tools set to be able to respond to these day-to-day challenges. Through partnerships with the MPI, with our partners in CCA, with our partners in funding like Pritzker Pucker, our partners in CPD, we were able to come up with a strategy that best responds to some of these challenges. About three years ago, again, because we were monitoring, folks were monitoring the radio chatter, CPD had to encrypt the radios.
Yes.
So that delayed what you would hear on a live time, for example, your Citizen app, or if you just, you know, have an app on your phone, that delays that communication about 30 minutes. Now, normally, also previous to that, CVI folks were also getting notices through what we call a CPIC, which is an email. That takes about 45 minutes. Now, when you think about an incident, do you want folks responding at the initial point or 45 minutes later? Obviously, the sooner the better. So that was kind of like the tipping point of trying to figure out how we work together, because up until that point, there's, you know, CVI and CPD have already had partnerships and working relationships in different districts. It wasn't common in all districts. Some districts felt a certain way about CVI, and some districts had better relationships. But when you have that kind of staggering, it makes it challenging. So again, the idea was to respond to something with a partnership of our community partners as soon as possible.
Yep, thank you. And I just want to remind us, we are time crunch, so we're trying to get some.
Apologize, I'm a little long-winded. So, I do this every day.
A little concise. No, it's all good. It's all good. So from CPD's lens, Director Brooks, if you want to talk about from what is the professional understanding that exists from CPD's lens.
So good afternoon, everyone. So from CPD's lens, so we had been working with CVI for a number of years. That relationship was really at the commander level. And at the commander level, the access was wide, and you know it was working. However, in the streets, the commander does not show up to every crime. It is that patrol car, it is that sergeant that's showing up on the scene. We were looking for ways that we could get those officers and those supervisors to have a better understanding of what we were trying to achieve. So that was number one. As Elvis has mentioned, after 2020, we encrypted our radios for a number of reasons. It was not targeted at CVI or anyone else. There was a number of security concerns that came out of 2020 that necessitated us to encrypt our radios. But the unintended consequence was the public no longer had the immediate access to that information. We still do. Our radios are still, you can still listen to our radios. It's just about a half hour delay.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do that, and we also wanted to really share with our members what are some of the limitations of CVI. So here's misconceptions. I don't care, you know, whether it's your house or 12,000 individuals. Everyone has an idea based upon the game of telephone. They heard from this officer what CVI, from that officer what CVI. They heard from this experience or that experience. We wanted to provide a very knowledge-based expectations of what we're going to be doing and what we should expect from each other. And that was really our driver to make sure that we establish a professional understanding.
Thank you.
For sure. And just first, I just want to acknowledge the Most High. It's definitely a blessing from the Most High to be here to speak on this topic. I want to quickly acknowledge the City Club. I want to acknowledge each and every one of you. And then I just want to give a special acknowledgement, a heartfelt acknowledgement to all my CVI family that's here present today. So just two quick points I just want to add on what my panelists shared. The first is, we're establishing standards of practice, and that's factoring both promising practices and harmful practices that we need to avoid. The second thing is, anybody who's been doing this work 2 to 3 years, the most common experience is you finally get a district commander who knows how to effectively utilize CVI, and then what happens? Overnight, they're gone. They're moved to another part of the department. And what happens with that is a painful reset, and even you get set back 20 steps. And so what we're doing, the task that we have with this professional understanding is actually to infect the system of how we actually do business, CVI, CPD, so that it actually outlives a person or an administration.
Thank you. So Jalen and Director Brooks, you guys both have worked either with CPD or CVI for a couple of decades. Talk to us about the evolution of this professional understanding, but just the field, if you will. And also talk to us, why does this strategy make sense right now?
Let's go ahead. All right. So shortly after I became a street outreach worker, Phil Klein was sworn in. So that just gives you a sense of the tenure that we're talking about. So, I mean, I'm just going to speak candidly. And this didn't apply to all law enforcement. But I think for many within law enforcement, the sentiment which was vocalized at times was that interrupters were really criminals hiding behind, using CVI as a cover. They weren't sharing information. And when shootings did drop, there was also there was issues around who should receive the credit. Just being honest, there were times that actually even entities outside of CVI and CPD, political entities and even funders, tried to force the marriage, and it backfired. What I'd say milestones of change that make professional understanding possible today, I would say first, we have a number within the ranks of CVI and CPD. And we're talking about champions that actually went against the grain of the department, went against the grain of CVI, and actually utilized both CVI and CPD strategies effectively. Many of those individuals have now been promoted within our ranks. Some examples of that, Superintendent Snelling, my brother right here, you know what I mean, next to me, but also people like Watson, Parham, Waller. And so that helped. The second critical thing that happened, And hear me clearly on this, there is no substitute for actually seeing the value firsthand. So what we saw during a pandemic, an escalation in shootings, but also an escalation in racial tensions, an escalation in different, large gatherings that were destructive, you know what I mean? And so during that time, and I'm going to be honest, during that time, me and Glenn, we probably started and ended a number of shifts together. He laughed, he knew, you know what I mean? And at the end of a lot of difficult shifts, it was police officers I didn't even know came up to me, came up to the team and was like, man, we didn't even respect what y'all was doing. But now we see it's vital. And even, I'm not going to even lie, even on the CVI side, we had some street outreach workers who developed an appreciation for what effective policing could look like. The third thing, and this is also critical, really sustainability and an increase in funds that actually helped us to strengthen, and it led to CVI enhancements, qualitative enhancements. And so, like, for example, with MPA, I want to acknowledge, you know, MPI, we're talking about standardized training for all of the, for outreach across the city. We're talking about innovations like FLIP. We're talking about even adding to the list of services that we're providing to the high-risk participants. So things like behavioral health, things like stipends, things like workforce and jobs, these things weren't part of some of the earlier CVI initiatives. And these types of enhancements, and not to mention ongoing evaluation. So we talked about Crime Lab. Shout out to them. Shout out to Corners. They're helping keep us honest. What's working well? What's not working? So what you see is CVI is actually able to provide more meat, more substance when it comes to the impact. And I think that all of those things together makes it possible for a professional understanding today.
Thank you.
Yep. So first of all, I just want to note for the record, we started when we were 12 years old. And I started with Terry Hillard. Let's kind of look at this path of CVI. When I was first introduced to CVI, I was in the 24th district, and it was still ceasefire was the initial. And it showed great promise, but as Jalen pointed out, we did not have a true understanding. So what you essentially had are a number of individuals who were champions, who understood the value of it. You had people who told the department what to do. And just for anybody that doesn't know, we do not respond well when you tell us what to do. All right. And, you know, and it was fraught with a political environment, and they lost funding and et cetera. But there was the seed that was planted that this has great value. And let me talk about that value. When we have seen the greatest reductions in homicides in the city, it is the point where the city comes together and works as a collective to address violence. It is not just police. When we fall kind of, when we don't reach our potential in terms of addressing violence, it's when the police are just out there alone using our handcuffs. Okay? It just, it has some effect, but it's a limited effect. Mm-hmm. Why CVI is so important now is that we have an entrenched problem. And that entrenched problem is violence. And we're going to have to attack it in a number of different avenues. CVI is one of those cornerstone partners. Someone has to reach these individuals before they become a victim or an offender. And believe it or not, I think I'm very talented, but they're not going to listen to me. They just aren't. So there's people there who can really deliver a message, can reach out, and guess what? People are receptive to the help that's being offered. All right. That's hard to measure. But that is one less victim. That is one less offender. That is how we make the difference of reducing violence. So we clearly recognize it. And we will continue to work with CBI in that because it helps reduce violence. Now, let's talk about credit. As much as my organization, and I love my organization, we get measured by crimes every day starting at 4 o'clock on your evening news. And somebody's going to look at the stats. And then we're going to say we did X, Y, Z, and it caused crime to fall. It is never that simple. It is always going to be a number of factors, including CVI, including the efforts of our officers, including our other partners, whether that be the state's attorney or CPS or our community block clubs. All those things make a difference. And the better and more coordinated we work with those, the greater success we have as a city.
Thank you. To that end, thank you. Jalen, if you can, speak to what Director Brooks was just speaking about, and maybe the elephant in the room, that CBI is working to help with those stats and clearance rates. How do we work with, CPD in this capacity?
Yeah, well, I would say if you're asking, are we actually sharing information to actually solve crimes or to increase clearance rates, the answer is an emphatic no. And I just want people to just really understand, we're talking about two different approaches to public safety. Both have value. When you think about the value of CVI, trusted insiders trained to actually put out fires, interruption, mediation, and when you look at the FLIP research finding, 2,172 mediations contributed to a 41% drop in shootings in hot spots, which are war zones. But then But secondly, if you look at the services and the opportunities that we're providing for high-risk individuals, high-risk men and women, like when you think about the research finding there, clients, participants who are receiving these CVI services, we're seeing significant drops in violent arrest and violent victimizations. And so somebody goes through a CRED program, sees a 73% drop in violent arrests. That's freeing up the department's resources. And when you think about the metrics to actually gauge success for CVI, we're talking about things like mediations, non-aggression agreements, the number of individuals and groups that are receiving services. But when you think about some of the metrics like Glenn talked about to actually gauge success for CPD, you may be looking at gun recoveries, arrests, clearance rates. But the final thought I want to share here, you will always run into problems when you look at CVI through a criminal justice lens. It needs to be looked at through a public health lens. And when you look at it through this criminal justice lens, you miss the value of CVI. And not only that, you actually put harmful expectations on CVI because you're gauging the success based on metrics that you use to gauge CPD success.
Thank you. And so I'm going to wrap it up with two final questions because I want to leave room for the audience to ask any questions that they may have as well. And so this question is to you, Director Brooks, and then I'll ask the final question to you, Elvis. And so, Director Brooks, and this is a question that we talked about, you know, a lot, is that how does CBI fit into CPD's strategy for violence reduction, and what role would it play in the spring or summer strategy? We think about a lot of the things that we see happen downtown, and you know, understand about the trends, but how does CBI fit into CPD's strategy?
So let me answer this in two parts, all right? I'm going to go with the neighborhoods, then I'm going to talk about downtown. Okay. The neighborhoods is really our focus. That's where the bulk of violence happens, all right, where people live. Our focus there in terms of it is really at that district commander level and those relationships and this professional understanding. It is ensuring that we share information where we can share information. And by why I say share information, I don't want to leave any doubt here. What I'm talking about is making sure people know when we have these incidents of violence. All right. I am not looking for it. The superintendent is not looking for it. We are not looking for CVI to solve our cases, period. All right. We have detectives. They are trained. We have spent a lot of resources in reorganizing them. They're having tremendous success. That is a wonderful thing. What we are trying to do with CVI is prevent it from ever happening. That is, the goal isn't, do we reduce from 500 shootings to 400 shootings or 200 shootings? The goal is not to have shootings, not to have people dead.
There you go.
All right? That is the bottom line goal. I'd rather have officers driving up and down the street and not dealing with a shooting than going through 7 shootings in a Saturday. All right? That is our goal. So that's number one. And that's our shared goal.
Yep.
All right. Now, let's talk about downtown. We have a very big challenge. We have young people who are using social media to get together. I will tell you this. Young people want to get together the same reason you did.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
They're trying to be boys and they're trying to be girls. Okay? This is what it comes down to. Yeah. However, what is different is the behavior that's associated with it.
Yep.
All right? And we have to address it. And there is, and I'm sure Dan and I were talking about it. I'm sure we'll come back here and have a whole conversation. But what we do is use CVI to communicate with those young people each and every Saturday. And I will tell you, it's valuable.
Sure.
I would rather CVI have a conversation with a 14-year-old than a 35-year-old officer who's trying to explain to him, and that young person, I will not cuss here, tells that officer to go kick rocks. Okay. And that officer is like, oh no, we are not kicking rocks. And having CVI to help diffuse that and to negotiate that is something which is helpful. Now, I also don't want to leave the misperception that we are solely relying on that. We will hold people accountable.
Yep.
We will make arrests when they are dictated. All right. We will put resources out there. But we are trying to solve this so that we can reduce the likelihood of violence and gain compliance and have these young people be safe while they're down there.
Thank you.
Okay.
So before I ask Elvis, the final question, I do want to just highlight something that Director Brooks just said, is just how the partnership and this professional understanding that exists between CBI and CPD. And so, again, to reiterate, it is a complementary, you know, role, but also independent. And so what I heard it described best is when we were at a conference in Atlanta, Director Brooks, when you gave the visual of like a Venn diagram. And so in the Venn diagram, there's an element which we work for. have that relationship together. But then there's outside elements where it's private or separate from both entities. So CBI, of course, we're not sharing that type of information. That is apart from that relationship. And then there's a part where we come in together. So again, it is complementary, but also independent of the work. And so we're not working and sharing all information. Same with CPD. They're not sharing information. And of course, we expect them to do their jobs. And so the final question for you, Elvis, today, and I see some of the people who helped with this particular question is in the room today, is the workshop and the curriculum that was created and co-created by CPD and CBI with support of some of our partners from Civic Alliance, who's some of us who's here with us today in the training. Can you share the insight on the process of this experience? How did that come about, these workshops that we're doing with CBI and CPD?
Again, to Jalen's point, we wanted to make sure we had a consistent playbook about how we responded when we were in the area of the incident. And so how do people work with each other, right? And making sure everybody understood individual responsibility, but what's that holistic approach and how are we going to be successful if we're going to be partners? And so we brought folks from CPD, from CVI, CCA brought us together with funding of the Pritzker Putker Family Foundation. We're able to come together and say, what is going to be worse? What is best for all of us? What do they need to understand? What tools do they need to have? So very appreciative of everybody's efforts and everybody's contributions to that. That extended to about a 5-hour day workshop where we have both CPD and CVI in the same room. When people walk out of this room, a lot of these folks are like, why can't we do more of these? On both sides. Everybody is extremely happy with the results. They have a better understanding of everybody's role, and there's a different level of communication. It's obviously built on trust, but more importantly, on confidence that each party knows what they're doing when they're on site. I think that's the key thing to walk away with.
Yep. Thank you. And Jalen, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I just want to say, and definitely shout out to Elvis. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, the commitment and the passion. Here with his wife and his 3-week. You know what I mean? That's serious. So now I just want to share, I mean, and definitely shout out to the Civic Consultant Alliance. Those trainings, I mean, you can't even really put into words. I mean, we had a couple of situations at the trainings where we had actually like street outreach workers and their former arresting officer was in a training.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like we're talking about, like Glenn talked about earlier, misconceptions, some of the issues that we have on both sides, and we're just really getting an opportunity to really unpack a lot of the tension. You know what I mean? And that actually, so the training is also about healing as well. The other thing I just want to say, just going back to Glenn's point real quick on the trends, looking at the last 18 months worth of trends, we've seen 62 trends, and I do want to acknowledge the CPRU team. 82% of those 62 trends resulted in 0 victims and 0 arrest. And so it really just highlights, I didn't say 100, but 82%. So that's good. And like Glenn says, sometimes things go left. We've been down there when sadly, you know, some of our youth have lost their lives down there. And so, and we're, you know, they holding the line. We're trying to stop it from starting on the front end. You know, sometimes it goes all the way left, and CPD, they step in and do what CPD does. So, I mean, I think it's, and I just want to just quickly acknowledge Glenn, because like several years ago, you know, I got the call from Glenn. Like, look, man, we got trends. This one of the trends was just starting. You know, a bunch of youth supposed to come downtown. You know, we already seen where it's been destructive. Can you bring some of your CVI, you know, workers down there? And I'm like, man, like we focused on the neighborhoods. Like, you know what I mean? He talking about downtown, Millennium Park, beaches, you know what I mean? Like it didn't even, you know, it wasn't something that I thought made a lot of sense initially, but just, you know, let's go down there. So we went down there, some flip workers, some outreach, and the reality though, you know, even though we're downtown or at the beach, these were our youth from our neighborhoods though. And so it made sense for us to be there. And we saw when we were there, we saw less victimization and arrest, this same trend that we're seeing from evaluation findings from CVI, you know, implementation. And so I think, you know, just shout out to Glenn for even thinking that could make sense. I mean, we took the best practices of what went well, but so many things didn't go well. You know what I mean? And so like really took all of those best practices and developed that CPRU strategy. So, I mean, I think this definitely is a new day for Chicago, and just appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. We're opening up for audience questions.
Yeah, we still have about 10 minutes. So I want to I have a couple of pre-submitted questions, but I do want to ask if anyone in the room has one. I'm happy to step out into the audience and play my game show host role here. And if you don't mind standing up and introducing yourself too, thanks.
My name's Steve. Both Los Angeles and New York have had significantly lower levels of gun violence. Yeah. What can Chicago learn from the experience of L.A. and New York?
So let's start it from a policing perspective. We spend a lot of time with our counterparts in New York and L.A. I was just in L.A., I think, last month, and I talked to New York on a regular basis, and not as much as the soup does, but we spend a lot of time there. I think we can learn a lot, and we do, but one thing we really just got to come to grips with, the number of guns in this particular city is beyond outrageous. That's number one. Number two, and here's the most difficult part, people are willing to use them to settle the most trivial disputes. That is something which we as a city are really going to have to work on in readjusting that culture. You know, just because you said something about me on Twitter doesn't mean I have to go shoot you. That is something which is, as a city, we got to come together with. We're going to do everything else. I think, and by the way, that is something that CVI is better equipped than a patrol officer, because that's a different type of relationship. All right. Those are the kind of things that we really have to grapple with. We'll deal with guns. We'll keep making arrests. We'll keep doing those things. But we really, people's willingness to use guns here is just, I really wish I had an answer to it, but I don't know why people want to shoot each other over a Facebook post.
I would just add to it that I mean, I think if you interview Beck from L.A. or you talk with New York, some of the things that we're seeing in Chicago, I think we're on our road to doing some of those things. I mean, you'll never talk to L.A. and New York when they talk about the strategy that actually led them to seeing under 1,000, under 500, 200-300 homicides a year. They always talk about effective policing, accountability, trust, but they talk about CVI and partnering more broadly. So we're seeing more of that. The other thing is the consistent funding. I mean, I think our partners in LA and in New York, they were ahead of us for a moment when we're talking about funding consistency, even from the public sector. We actually did things in reverse. I would say the private sector stepped up first with our PSPC partners, and then the public sector. These last few years, strong leadership, we've seen the increases, and then with the ARPA dollars, which are, you know, soon to sunset. The last thing I would just say is, like, when you got an understanding of the community dynamics, go community by community. You in Austin, you got 50 different groups, cliques, just in that one community. You can be in Inglewood, 50 different groups, cliques, just in that one community. North Lawndale, 30 plus groups, cliques in that one community. And some of the things that some of the lessons learned that we're now starting to address with SC2 and some of the other strategies, you cannot stop conflict on one side. You can't stop a conflict on one side of the conflict, basically. So you got two groups that's in conflict. We can't just work with one side and think the other side, you know, they're going to mysteriously stop shooting. We got to serve every single group, every single clique, everybody that's highest risk. And that takes intentional collaboration with CVI partners who may have been working in silos in the past. We got to all come to the table. Make sure it's equity on these blocks. And when I'm talking equity, I'm talking about every single group, clique getting access to these CVI services. So that's something that we're really lifting up right now. And I think we'll see more strides, you know what I mean, in a positive manner as we move forward.
I think one thing that I would also add is that our In Chicago, we don't push our problems outside our city. We work with the people that are in our city. And that's what we're learning to do, is to continue to work with the people in our city. What you'll see in some of the other cities, that there's been displacements of populations that we haven't seen here, at least not to the same numbers, right? So we're not displacing complete communities out because of what a number of things. So we're working with the folks that are in the community. We want to make sure we stay with the folks in the community. And I think that's the goal of this mayor and previous administrations, was to continue to support people from leaving our city. So we're going to address our challenges here as the best we can. But we are learning a lot. We're doing more. We're connecting with our schools, with other partners, our churches, our park districts. Across the board, we are working hand in hand. CVI has access to all more resources than they ever had in the past. And so we're very much moving in the right direction.
I'm in the back corner here with a question, and hopefully we keep this quick because we have one more up there, and then I know we want to close out. So I'm going to hand this over quick.
Thank you. Donnell Williams, just wanting to acknowledge everybody in the room, especially those who have paved the way for us to do the work that we're doing. Thanking you for having this posture of inviting us to build the table and not be invited to the table. So love that. But then also being a native of Chicago and knowing and have lived through and now working in this field, how can we change the narrative that's being spewed out that Chicago is not what it was 20 years ago? There's been a significant change in the shootings and murders, but that's not being put out. Only thing that's being put out is this plague of fear. And that's not what we see in the numbers in these meetings. They don't add up to what's being spewed out.
Who wants to take that one first?
That one.
Oh, me too.
Go ahead.
All right. So, in the back of the room somewhere here is Don Terry, who's with News Affairs, who is charged with dealing with this on a daily basis. We push out the numbers every day. The numbers are not going to change the story. What is going to change the story is when we work together and we tell the story, versus having a, you know, and let's be frank, we are now in a national environment, and it's kind of fun to pick on Chicago, but Chicago, we as Chicagoans have to be a bigger cheerleader and tell our story. You know, it's amazing when we all travel, and the first thing, you're from Chicago, oh my God, you know, how do you survive? Trader Joe's. But we have to tell our story. And that is, and whether it's through venues such as this, whether it's through your personal channels and et cetera, but we have to continue to tell our story over and over again. And the fact is, everyone who comes to this wonderful city loves this wonderful city.
Yeah.
And we just got to keep telling that story. That would be my quick answer, but Don has a more professional answer.
No, it's good. It's good.
I would add, you know, The safety is a feeling, right? It's about how you feel about the folks around. I would always encourage people, go to 31st and Lawndale on a Wednesday or Friday evening. There's always like 500 kids running around that neighborhood in the park at the front of the school. This is what happens when people come together and say, this is our community, this is our space. And that doesn't get enough coverage. When you hear Little Village, I'm not going there after 5 o'clock because of the number of so-and-so. But our partners from Enlace and New Life would tell you, if you go there on a Wednesday, on a Friday, at Gary Campus, there's 500 kids. There's eloteros, there's candy, there's all number of things. We have not seen any violence while that is happening with families, communities, diverse groups of folks take over their communities. We don't see these things, but we don't get that type of coverage. So please go to the communities they tell you about and experience what their day-to-day is. And a lot of it is love, and a lot of it is wonderful.
All right, we've got one more. I'm back up front, if you don't mind.
How you doing? My name is Wanaki, and I'm listening to you all, and I'm wondering, because every time we have these conversations, it seems to always be independent or separate from economics. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when you start speaking about somebody making a Facebook post and then somebody shooting, that's a mindset, right? And so I'm wondering how your conversations around that, and how do you connect the two, and what do you think?
Yeah, I'll start there. And I think this is what I'm referring to with some of the CVI enhancements. In the past, I mean, we did some strong work in CVI, but it was largely around interruption. And we didn't have jobs. We didn't have, you know, economic opportunities. And so, you know, when you think about it, like from an outsider that's looking in, a lot of times mediations are happening and people not seeing them. These are shootings that's not happening. But if that's all it is, though, then you're going to leave people wondering, like, well, what's the real value? What are they really doing? And so when we're having real conversations, like we got stipends, we got economic opportunities, we're doing workforce development, because the reality is, I mean, I always go back to, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you're at the bottom of the pyramid and those basic safety and financial economic needs are not being met, like how are people going to progress up that pyramid to self-actualization? So it's real. Like we having real conversations and we not telling people, look, just, you know, put all that to the side and we don't have nothing to offer them. So it's a real conversation, and I appreciate you bringing it up. And just one last thing I just want to share to make sure everybody has, you know, leaves out of here with this professional understanding. Two elements that's critical to it as well. One, we have a mechanism for addressing grievances. And so I'm not going to sit up here and act like it's always perfect. But when things go left, who you going to reach out to? You going to reach out to the media? You going to reach out to the funder? You're going to reach out to COPA? You know what I mean? Like, we got real mechanisms. Who are you speaking to from each organization and on a CPD front? And we've seen, like, issues get raised on both sides, like serious issues. Acknowledge my brother Steve. We sat in a situation where they brought up some issues out in Inglewood. Mm-hmm. We sat for hours. You know what I mean? They brought their issues up. We raised our issues. We collectively came up with a solution that was mutually, you know, acceptable on all sides, and we executed on it. And that improves the trust and the will to partner. But the second thing, though, that's also critical is a system of accountability, though. And so, like, if, like Elvis talked about in the beginning, when CPD sends us a shooting notification in real time, what's outreach doing with it? Is it going into a black hole? Did they respond? What was the response? We're getting the answers to these questions with this professional understanding, and that's allowing a mutual respect on both sides as we move forward.
Yeah. There are a whole host of questions. I'm sorry we're not going to be able to get to them, but it proves that we will need to talk about this
part two, again,
right? To be continued. Do you want to close out for a minute, and then I'll just share a couple quick things.
Yeah. So if I can,
here, this should work. Sorry.
If I can, in typical MPI, so a division of MPI is MPA. And so if I can, in typical MPA fashion, for those of us who are familiar with our MPA way, I would like to close out with a boom. And so our boom at the Metropolitan Peace Academy, it really measures our collective. No gunshot booms, but celebrate. Right? It's a celebratory boom. And so we just want to measure the impact that Metropolitan Peace Initiative, as well as our partners here today and Metropolitan Peace Academy, has had in this particular space today at City Club. So if that's okay, if I can count us out, and we can, as our Chief Training Officer, Vanessa Perry DeReef at the Metropolitan Peace Initiative, will say, you know, let us tear the roof off this particular building today with our boom. And so I'm going to count off real loud, and I want us to say boom on the count of three. Y'all ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
Boom.
All right. Thank you so very much.
I'm so glad the roof didn't come off, because we have a lot of programs to come soon. And I promised a second for this. So thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Jalen from CRED. Thank you, Glenn, CPD, and of course, Elvis. Didn't hear the baby make one peep even after the boom. So thank you. As I walked around the room, I saw so many others who are doing things on a daily basis and dedicating your lives to this kind of work. Blue Pacheco Cornejo is here with Blue Azul Center. He's building in Auburn Gresham. Some great Christina Rice with Global Girls. Christina, where are you at? There you are. My block, my hood, my city. You know, Jamal and his team. You guys are all doing amazing, amazing things. SWAP is here. You know, and all the work you all have been doing. This takes a village, right? And City Club is committed to lifting that village up and continuing to share this platform with people like everyone that you heard from today. My question, if I had a question, but they're already gone. What can we talk about next? What do we need to hone in on next?
We talk about gun violence all the time. We talk about interruption. We talk about preventative measures and early intervention. And what else? We need to know. You know, we need to know what's going on out there and what we can do to be helpful to bring this dialogue to the civic community, make sure we have the right people in the room listening and supporting all the good that's happening. So thank you. Thank you for that brief commercial. Come back to City Club. There are plenty of programs. We just announced on Monday, actually Monday evening, this would be really neat, with the Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and City Club are going to co-host an evening at the Firehouse Restaurant where we're talking about women stories, real talk, real stories from women who have been impacted by the investments that have been made in women in good ways, you know, and like what years ago everyone announces these investments. What actually comes of that? And I think we've got some proof now. So we're going to hear about that from a number of people in a really cool setting. So join us for that. Everybody's welcome. That's on our website. The imperative of investing in black men and fathers in Chicago. We figure, okay, if we have a women's, we have to have the father's event, right? And it's actually the next day. So April 22nd, with the Field Foundation. That's going to be another incredible program that I think is sold. It's almost sold out. If not, we'll probably open up a table soon. That's on April 22nd. And then on the 23rd, oh my gosh, next week is going to be busy. Incoming, Chicago Park District Superintendent Carlos Ramirez. Carlos Ramirez Rosa. I think that was him cutting me off. That's the 23rd, and then May 7th, CPS New Arts Education Plan. As you can tell, so many things to discuss, so much going on in the city, and it's good stuff. We live in the best city in the world, and because of all of you, we're just going to make it better. So come back to City Club soon. Thank you to our panelists. Thanks to all of you. See you soon back at City Club.